And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's been a wild rancher, but the Canucks finally got a victory as we do our latest podcast here on Tuesday. After a 2-1 win, the Canucks knock off the Montreal Canadiens. If this was a football game, we would call this the Dysfunction Bowl. One Canadian team gets rid of a lot of upper management and one Canadian team just kind of sitting there waiting. We'll see which one has the better results. But the Canucks finally win. Elias Pettersson finally scores. All is right in the world, rancher.
The Habs won off the ice this weekend. The Canucks won on the ice on Monday. The Dysfunction Bowl. The Crypto.com Dysfunction Bowl. I don't know. We got to give it a sponsor, right?
We got to give it a sponsor. We could sponsor it after the Jays and Mariners because the Mariners just got better, buddy. Reyes goes to the M's. I know that we can't get into that because we've already had our bets. But let's stick to hockey because I know everybody's expecting us to dive into baseball. Everyone's expecting us because you trolled. You accused me earlier of trolling Blue Jay fans and you've trolled Mariner fans today. So I had to just bring that up quickly. But look, let's talk hockey because the Canucks haven't had a lot to smile about. And I don't know that anything is going to change what is inevitable, right? But let's start with the game and then we'll get into the big picture stuff because when you look at the last three games on this trip, the Canucks have done some good things. We're not here to talk about moral victories, but
no.
Against Columbus in the first two periods, against Boston for the first two periods of that game, and now here against Montreal, and they finally get rewarded with a result with their first regulation win in over a month. So what do you make of their form and finally getting a result?
Well, they have played well. Like, they've played well 5-on-5. They actually are getting better defensive results than they have any right to, considering this abysmal personnel on the back end. And, you know, I think about, like, for me, there's the moment that just tells you everything you need to know about the Canucks, right? And it's like, Oliver Ekman-Larsson gets penalized, and it's a soft penalty on, but Anton Bleed got hurt on the play, right? So, Anton Bleed gets hurt, it's an Ekman-Larsson hit, tough penalty for the Canucks, and the way that this team is built, right, when Ekman-Larsson goes to the box, who kills penalties on the left side? Nope, like they don't have a guy to do it. So you're talking about Pasternak, Bergeron, and Marchand, right? Just like absolute lights out killers in this league, right? And it's Kyle Burrows on the left side playing on his offside in like his 15th NHL game ever. And guess what happens, Farhan? He gets walked. He gets walked by Brad Marchand. No shame in that. Everyone, like, better players have been walked by Brad Marchand in bigger moments. You know, Brad Marchand lives to destroy hopes and dreams. I don't have to tell our listeners that. But, I mean, what are you going to do? You need another lefty penalty killer. They don't have one. Like that for me, that moment, that's the encapsulation of what's gone wrong for the Canucks. It's like they're fine 5-on-5, but in key moments, they don't have the pieces they need. They do not have the pieces they need. And meanwhile, off the ice, away from the ice, the team is going through a series of evident systemic failures, right? Sort of being punctuated by the fact that they've got a general manager who is pretty clearly actively trying to replace the head coach, right? And isn't functioning in a discreet enough way to prevent that from being public, even as the club continues to have Travis Green run practices and run morning skates and coach games.
And talk to the media.
And talk to the media. And the only person talking to the media. And, you know, it's also becoming pretty clear that, you know, like, are the Canucks, are the candidates that Benning is landing on even, like, is he getting ownership to yes on Green's replacements? Like, that's an open question. So you've got a general manager with what appears to be limited autonomy trying to replace a head coach pretty actively, with news leaking about various candidates on a relatively regular basis as Green continues to go about his job, and the team's losing games despite playing decently and still putting in, for the most part, like a relatively honest, like other than that Pittsburgh game, I don't think the Canucks have had a bad effort on this road trip. Like a game where you'd be like, oh boy, like what a disaster. They just don't have the pieces. And it's evident in all these small moments where they, you know, cost themselves, like find ways to lose because they suck. Because the team is as badly built as any all-in teams roster that I've ever seen. And it just sucks. Like, it just sucks to watch this team play. It sucks to watch these people go through this. And it's just like everyone, like, let me ask you this question, Farhan. Like, go look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, back-to-back Stanley Cup winners, right? And they've got 4 assistant general managers. The Canucks have 2, and one of whom, like, the joke in the Vancouver market is, what do they do? You know? Those assistant GMs, like, they've been there for 8 years. Like, there's this incredible amount of loyalty and stability that sort of underpins Tampa Bay Lightning hockey operations.
Well, we've talked about this multiple times.
How are they ever going to compete with that? How are they ever going to compete with that?
Well, when you've talked about professional organizations, you know, and what this team needs to aspire to be, and they're not that, right? In terms of their overall structure from top to bottom, it's not a professional organization when you compare it to the successful ones. It just isn't, right? And there's not really an understanding of what that should look like, because the owner wants to occupy a certain role. The general manager is only equipped to kind of wrap his head around specific roles and silos and the ability to delegate. So we understand that this is not a professionally run organization by the standards of the top teams in the NHL. But, you know, and there's so much
macro. Well, then you're never going to be a top team in the NHL.
Well, okay, so that's fine. So we understand that from a macro perspective. Like, but let's just stay micro for a little bit. Okay. Let's just stay micro for a little bit.
But it's connected. Like Kyle Burrows.
I know it is. I know it is. Like, we used to laugh every time Tyler Toffoli scored on the Vancouver Canucks, right? Like, it was comical, you know. And if the rights holder wasn't so sensitive, they would probably, rather than cut to a shot of who screwed up or cut to a shot of Travis Green every time Tyler Toffoli scored, they should have cut to a shot of Jim Benning. So today, do you think that when Tucker Poolman made that garbage pass into Bo Horvat's skates that ultimately led to that goal at the end, do you think that that same level of cringe might have been applied to Benning again? Do you think he possibly gets what he's built here?
Oh, I'm sure he does. I mean,
does he really? Were there. You guys, you know, on the analytics side, carved that signing from the first minute.
I was actually carving it before it was done because I had wind of their interest.
So when those moments continue to happen, when those moments continue to happen on the heels of the last big defenseman he got from Winnipeg doing, you know, those types of things, like, do you get the sense that he possibly has his head wrapped around the fact that I effed up?
Well, so Demko stacks the pads. Demko stacks the pads. That great save late in Montreal on Monday night, right? Name the two defensemen on the ice for that shift. Yeah,
Pullman and Burrows.
No, Pullman and Myers.
Pullman and Myers. Okay.
It's just like, oh my goodness. Like, how did you think that was going to end up? How did, you know, like, and yet everyone else had played. And like Travis Hamonic, I don't even know where he is.
Yeah, no, I know you asked the question this morning whether or not he'd be back, and we expected him to be back for these final two games, and it hasn't happened.
He's fallen down the Ozzie Smith like miracle, you know, that in The Simpsons where he like falls forever in the baseball episode. Okay. We don't know where he is again.
You've got that episode, you've got Wile E. Coyote in back-to-back shows. That's a lot to digest. But listen,
I like cartoons.
Let's stick with Micro, and I ask this because is there anything, because we saw the run of form. Now, it would be easy to say that a bounce here and there, but when the penalty kill continues to happen, which is a reflection of how poorly the roster is constructed and those kinds of things continue to bite them, you know, it's not just a bounce here and there, because there are specific points in time in the game where the failure or the problem is just going to be too big to mask, which they've been able to do at 5-on-5. So is there anything that can be done to slow the Travis firing train down? Because as you said, it's pretty clear the general manager has been actively looking for the head coach's replacement. So is there anything that could happen? Because if Demko makes one more save, or if the right bounce happens, and I, obviously I've said that that's not realistic, but you know, shooting stars and lunar eclipses, and if it happens by chance and all of a sudden there's a run of three games or four games, is there anything that can be done to slow down the coach replacement train?
I have no idea. I don't know.
The die has been VIPs, cast. The VIPs come for you to put your stamp on it.
I know. My stamp is, I don't know what this organization is thinking, because the changes that need to happen seem pretty obvious, and the order in which they should happen seems crystal clear. And yet, you know, I like to think through problems, and how would I go about this? You know, I would probably start with an interim GM while conducting a search for a president of hockey operations who has significant business experience and educational credentials and the weight to manage up and the authority to rebuild what Canucks hockey operations looks like and the amount of resources that go into populating it. In terms of multiple general managers, a very senior pro scout with a lot of weight, maybe an assistant general manager with a pro scouting portfolio, you know, a director of player personnel, a role that the club hasn't had in forever. You know, you try and build a dynamic, collaborative organization, and then you figure it out from there, including the coach.
Yeah,
but including the GM.
That's such pie in the sky thinking. Like, and let's not like
No. I know. Sorry. I'm going through my exercise of saying what it's obvious they should do.
So forget the presidential part, because that won't happen.
Now let's flip it, right? Because it's like that would be the smartest approach to this, right? But sometimes I find it helpful to think through what's the smartest approach to this and being like, okay, well, that's not gonna happen. And then I think, what's the worst approach to this? And that sort of tends to be more closely approximates, like that more closely approximates how the Canucks will approach it, right? Organizationally speaking. And so what do I think the silliest approach would be? I think it would be to replace the head coach with Brad Shaw, who's interim at the moment, and try and leg it through this season while wasting the next 4 months before the deadline with a general manager who pretty clearly doesn't have full autonomy to shape this organization's future, and then make a change in the offseason, right? Because then you're wasting all this time before the deadline, and you're tolling a year on additional contracts, and you know, you just sort of live in stasis zone. That would, for me, be the worst approach to take, and that's the one I think is most likely, is like you wait for the next 5-1 loss, and Green gets replaced by the guy who's already in-house, and the club just sort of continues to limp through this season with no set plan or ambition of doing any better ever. And that's what I think is most likely. So there you go. I put my stamp on it. I've said what I think should happen. I said what I think will happen. And maybe the reality falls somewhere between those poles, but you know, those sort of seem like, you know, there's what should happen. What I would be like, good. Hey, look, that's an organization that's beginning to take their fate as something of a punchline seriously and trying to change it versus, oh, that's so Canucks of them.
Well, there's no doubt. And you know, I say the presidential piece is just such fiction, right? Because I don't think the owner really has his head wrapped around the fact that I'm the problem, right? Like, he doesn't have his head wrapped around that fact. So he wants involvement. He wants a level of control. And I just don't see that changing anytime in the short term. And you're right. I mean, as far as for them to go out and get a credible, experienced head coach, they're going to have to commit to that person. And why would you allow Jim Benning to commit to that person? Right. So, like, the logical way to do this, if you want to shake things up and do it right now, and when I say logical, I say that with the caveat of they're not going to take a big picture approach with a president and a building of a full organization. It's just never going to get up that high again. It's going to be at what, you know, who can you get to be the GM and who can you get to be the coach? It's going to be that level of thinking. So, you know, they're going to kick the tires on Claude Julien and Scotty Walker and whoever. And then in the end, you know, they're not going to be able to get a guy like that. And they're going to say, okay, well, we'll give it to Brad. We'll make the change after the loss. And yeah, and they'll probably let Jim kick the can down the road until the offseason. And when they could potentially make the same change right now and say, okay, Ryan Johnson, you're going to be that guy. You know, like, we think you can shepherd this to the end of the season, right? At the same level that the current GM could do.
I don't even think you do. You give it to RJ to shepherd to the end of the season. It's like, we're launching a full search for a president of hockey operations or a general manager, but it should be a president. And you're running the day-to-day for a couple months. If something comes up that's too good for us to say no to, a la
sure.
Tom Fitzgerald when he was the interim in New Jersey, sure. But, you know, short of that, we're just like, let's go make some moderate deals not involving assets for a lefty who can kill penalties and a right-handed centerman. Let's at least do a credible job of icing, like, a roster that can win some games, and let's, you know, go from there. Like, that's, you know, if you're going to go with the more deliberate approach, like, that's the way to do it. But again, I don't think this organization is serious about winning. I don't think they're serious about winning. Like, I just don't. I cannot square their behavior with being serious about competing in an NHL in which, you know, teams like Carolina, teams like Tampa Bay, teams like the Florida Panthers, teams like Colorado, teams like Vegas, teams like Toronto are legitimate and genuine sharps at the table. Like, are teams with a super sophisticated understanding of how to win in this league consistently. And, you know, this team just doesn't have a chance the way they're currently constructed. There's no chance. You can blame systems. You can blame Travis Green. You can blame the performance of Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser, and you wouldn't be all the way wrong, but you're not addressing the fundamental issue. You know what I'm saying? You're not even picking at the fundamental issue, which is this team is not built to compete in a sophisticated contemporary NHL. Period. And until they are, I don't know what to expect. Like, you can't expect a plan to turn this around in 2 years without some ambition and some discipline and a plan. And that's it. That's end of story.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
That brief bit of levity brought to you by your Vancouver Canucks, who are just not necessarily a lot to smile about, except they did wind up winning here on Monday night. 2-1 the final score. Elias Pettersson with an absolute PD classic. Like a retro PD goal. It's gotten to that point because we don't see those anymore. It's
what
retro.
What a relief. What a relief from him, eh? What a reaction.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was just the shot that we've been waiting to see for so long. And when it doesn't happen, it leads you to think, oh, there's still something wrong. And we've kind of dismissed the notion that injury is a part of this, right? But he finally
injury is not part of this.
He finally let it rip. It finally went in. You could see, not just him, like the whole bench, everybody just got completely jacked up that because they know what's at stake. They know what's going on. They know how important this player is to the entire team's success. And everybody breathed a certain level of relief when he finally did it.
This team needs Elias Pettersson to be the real Elias Pettersson, period. And he hasn't been. And he knows he hasn't been. And it's worn on him. You know, he's avoiding the internet. But don't make no mistake, like the pressure, the criticism, the contract, it's all snowballing for him. And he hasn't been having a great time. Like he hasn't been having fun. And I spoke with him post game, mostly without my recorder, just like trying to get a sense of where he's at. And, you know, he had fun tonight. He had fun tonight. He had fun playing the game and competing. He didn't play
a lot. That's because he scored early. Right? I mean, if he doesn't score early, does he have fun? Does the pressure weigh on him? And is it just another meh PD game? But because maybe that goal came in the first, and maybe it wasn't just a goal, it was a PD goal.
It was. I think a beauty.
That it wasn't like a hit the end boards and come back out and hit someone's ass and go in. Like it was a legit PD snipe job.
Yeah, it was. It was a beautiful goal. And his reaction told the whole story, right? Just a relief, just a flood of relief. Like I can still do that. And I think he needed that. I think he just needs to have some success. I think it can snowball for him. But right now, I don't think he's feeling instinctive in executing his game. You know, he's not finding, like, he sees it as finding the solution within the game and doing so constantly. Like, that's the solution to this problem. That's the solution to this problem. He is, at the end of the day, like an artist whose medium is carbon fiber and graphite, right? A technician who excels at spatial problem solving. And right now his instincts are off. He's not playing that free game. He's not having fun. He's not just going out there and doing it, like just playing the game. And I think it's because of a lot of things. Like I think there's no question that he was rusty after 8 months off. I think he had a good summer. He worked hard. Like I don't think it's a fitness thing. I just don't think he's there. I just don't think he's been there. And I think he's hyper aware of it. And I think it's snowballed into a complete lack of confidence and just a struggle day to day to go out there and enjoy outworking guys and playing his game and doing the simple things and letting it flow from there.
Does he remember his game? And I'm not trying to be negative towards him, but it feels at times watching him play like he's not even sure. Like you talk about not being instinctive, and it feels like he doesn't even remember, know, feel what that's supposed to look like.
Well, I thought he played well tonight. I mean, I thought he played well on Monday night, but you know, does he remember it? Of course, it's been his game his whole life, but I think he's, you know, very much aware of the fact that, you know, too often this season, that game has not been his. Like he has not had that game going on a regular enough basis. Like I think I know for sure that he knows where his game is at and that it's not acceptable and that he's not happy with it.
Is he feeling it in the room, from the room? Like you said, he's been off the internet and, you know, we collectively, like it's noise, right? Like, you know, Canuck Twitter and all of it, it's noise. But at the end of the day, and I put this out on Twitter a while back, that forget what we say, forget what the big bad media says, forget what Canuck's Twitter says. Ultimately, in that room, he knows that those players can't succeed until he plays his game. Do you get the sense that he is feeling it from within? Not that anybody is like, you know, shit talking him and saying, Petey, what are you doing? Like, wake up. I'm not talking about it like that. But do you get the sense that internally he gets that part of it?
So I'm going to spin this. I think he is getting it from internally, but he's getting it from internally, like from himself. But, you know, also I'm sure from, you know, the staff. And I mean, you know,
players is the most important part, though. Is he feeling it from his teammates that he has to look across from in the locker room every day? Did he indicate that?
I mean, I'm sure he is. But but I don't know that he is. I think he's feeling it mostly from himself. I'm going to be honest with you. I think Pettersson's such a perfectionist in terms of his outlook. I think the hardest, like, you know, hell is other people's. Yeah, sure. But sometimes hell can just be being alone in your own thoughts and working through your own struggles and knowing and being hyper aware of where you're at and knowing that you're not, like, that you're alien to yourself in terms of where your game's at. And that's where I think he's been for much of the past few weeks. I think it's been a real struggle because of what he expects from himself. And an interesting thing here. So he was the low ice time man for the Canucks 5-on-5 in Boston on Sunday night. And they fly to Montreal. And on Monday morning at Le Centre Bell, and this is extremely rare. The head coach steps on the ice. There is no morning skate, or at least no formal morning skate, but number 40 on the ice for morning skate, coach's decision. Travis Green also on the ice. And Pettersson got skated on Monday, like skated hard, like 35 minutes hard skate, some shooting work, a ton of skating work, meetings with the head coach himself, and then played tonight. And so this is really important because you'll see 11-10 5-on-5 ice time for Pettersson on the game sheet, right? When you look, that's the fourth line ice time relative to his teammates, 13-13 in total. Pettersson had a 30-35 minute. He had a rinse skate and in between a set of back-to-back games and still played on Monday night. And I do think he was a little bit tired going into this game, but the session was designed, like the way that he's being handled is designed to get the weight off his shoulders, to just give him something else to think about, to just get him on the ice, free skating, having fun, putting in some work so that he can be a little bit freer, a little bit relieved, maybe even a little bit tired so that he's not thinking so much when he's out there. You know, this is extraordinarily rare. I mean, the story I just told you might just seem like whatever.
That's big. Like, that's significant.
That never happens. That a guy who's playing both legs of a back-to-back gets skated hard in a morning skate. But that's the approach that Pettersson and the club took on Monday. And look, at the end of the day, it worked. He had fun. He played well.
Well, he drew two penalties. The second one was good. He was trying to carry it up ice and actually try to beat people instead of getting the puck off his stick. I asked him after the game, you know, how difficult was that for you to not get ice time? And he actually, it was a weird answer almost when he said, you know, I'm embracing it. And he kind of followed it up by saying that, you know, I'll just do the most with what I've got and that kind of thing. And I'm not sure what else you can say. I just found that one line weird, that I'm embracing it. Cause you've got to think on some levels it's pissing him off.
Well, it definitely pissed him off to not be on the ice 6-on-5 in Boston. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And tell you that much. But I think he just needs to get back to having fun. I think he's aware of that. And so I don't think he's, like, you know, gung-ho about it, by no means. But, you know, I think he's realistic about where his game's at. I think he's dissatisfied with where his game's at. And, you know, I think he's probably pretty open-minded to trying whatever. But yeah, I mean, They took a very, very non-traditional approach with preparing him for Monday night's game, skating him hard in the morning before a second leg of a back-to-back, and, you know, then limiting his ice time in part. You know, yes, it was a reflection of his performance, but also a reflection of the work that he put in. And Green alluded to it, right? Green alluded to it post. He said, you know, he's putting in some extra work on the ice and off the ice, right? That was a loaded comment. It may have flown under the water, under the radar, but that was a loaded comment. Pettersson got rinsed on Monday in addition to playing in the game.
Where do you think Pettersson is at as far as the head coach is concerned? Because, you know, we've talked about the thought that even if Travis hasn't lost the room, there may be certain young players on this team that maybe are starting to slowly not buy in or not, you know, feel the same level of love or motivation or any of that kind of stuff as it relates to the head coach. Where do you think Pettersson is in, where his thoughts are, his mindset is, as far as Travis Green is concerned?
Well, I think it's a good sign that they, I mean, not only was Pettersson skated, but it was Green that ran it.
Sure.
Yeah, that's rare too.
Yeah, that stands out.
So, you know, I think, look, I don't want to like go overboard and be like, that's a great sign. You know, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. We'll see if he can build off it. We'll see if this slowly works to get to Pettersson. I think there's clearly, like, at some point, if this head coach can't unlock Pettersson and Besser, what are we doing here?
Yeah, no question.
You know, so, I mean, it's like the long-term fate of this rebuild. I mean, the season's lost, but the long-term fate of this rebuild hinges on getting the most out of 40 and 40 and 6 and 43. You know what I mean? Like, and 53. And in particular, 40, though, right? Like, 40 is the straw that stirs this drink when things are good. So, you know, I think it's a good sign, I guess, that they're still working together, that they're still trying things, that they're trying to figure it out and working together clearly on it. You know, but there's a lot of road to run. Like, I'm not going to go so far as to say Petey is back because he scored a beautiful goal and had a big reaction and because he played better in, you know, fourth line minutes, 5-on-5 on Monday night. But, you know, hopefully it's a step. Hopefully this is the start of something that gets this team somewhere.
Yeah, you know, and as I talk about Pettersson,
just having fun, like just having fun, man. Like, you know, at the end of the day, this season is lost. It is. They're not making the playoffs. They're not reeling off, you know, the 80 points they need over the remaining 59 games.
You're so like, negative. There's no You're chance. So negative.
No, there's no chance. They're not rolling at a President's Trophy contender's pace for three quarters of the season. They do not have the horses to do it, but it still matters to not suck. Like, it still matters to play with some heart and with some effort and to put on a show for your fans when you're at home and to be a tough out when you're on the road and to play with some identity. Like, that still matters. This team still needs to do that. And for this team's long-term prospects, they still need to rebuild or get Pettersson back to the level he's usually been at, because next season they can't afford 20 games like this from him again. They can't afford 20 games from the team like this again. You know, like, you can't play like this in this league. So, you know, it still matters. It still matters. Just because they're not making the playoffs doesn't mean that I'm not curious to see Pettersson, you know, not curious, not waiting, how important it would be for Pettersson to pull out of this, to play like himself, to be fun to watch again. Not just for my entertainment covering this team, but also because I think it matters in the big picture. This team needs to get 40 back on track. They need to empower him to be the player he can be. They need to maximize his potential. And if they can't, then none of this matters anyway. We can argue about the third pair guy all we want. We can argue about Kyle Burrows not being out there on the PK because there's no other options all we want. It won't matter if they don't have great players. And Pettersson is a great player. He just hasn't had a great start. And getting him out of that, working through that, that's everything for this team.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
So as we dive back into the Canuck locker room, and you talk about having fun, a couple episodes ago, I kind of railed on a certain level of dysfunction in the locker room and just kind of how it was necessarily relating to Travis Green. And, you know, for me, I chafe at the notion of, you know, young players getting to play with a lack of accountability and ultimately the head coach is made to pay the price. But beyond that, there's been some stories out there that Bo Horvat and JT Miller, that they've caused a divide in the locker room, that there's Team Horvat and Team Miller, and the locker room is messed up not because of how guys are responding to the head coach, but how people are responding to one another. Is there any truth to that at all? Because JT Miller seems to be chuckling at the notion.
Well, he did to me, yeah. He certainly made light of it.
Your thoughts, based on what else you've heard, is he just deflecting, or is there any there?
I don't think there's any there, to be totally honest with you. You know, not that it's like hunky dory in that locker room, but you know, I don't think it's as putridly negative as the results make it seem, to be totally honest with you. And I certainly don't think the source of tension is primarily Miller and Horvat. In fact, you know, the people I've talked to about it suggest that, you know, those guys are good friends, like really close. So, you know, have there been tense moments this season? I'm sure there have. I'm sure. But, you know, I don't think there's a lot of there based on what I'm hearing anyway.
So where is the disconnect? I mean, is there some of that? This is a difficult situation for any team to go through. And, you know, we saw it last year to the point where there were certain players, Nate Schmidt among them, that just couldn't wait to get the hell out of here, right? And yeah, there were COVID circumstances and, you know, you couldn't necessarily enjoy the team and the city and all of that. Like, I get all of that. But this tests you. Watch the Seattle Seahawks last night absolutely blow it against Washington. And like, their offense is just a shit show. And just watching this team play, you have to believe on some levels that, you know, the locker room is being tested, right? Because there's a team that's used to having success and now it's not. And in the case of the Canucks, they're not necessarily used to having success outside of that miracle bubble episode. This team has got to be looking at each other and saying, hey, what's going on? And why aren't you picking up your end of the, of the end of the slack? And why aren't you doing your part? Like, do you sense that this starts on the heels of so much offseason expectation, getting last year just out of sight, out of mind? Like, how much is that locker room being tested right now? And is it starting to come apart at the seams?
I mean, I think there's a real disconnect between the organization and the locker room in terms of communicating vision. I think that the issues that impact the club that we discussed in the first segment at length, I think those impact the locker room. I do not think there is a winning environment around this club. I don't think there are winning players around this club. I don't think there's enough leadership anywhere in the organization. And so, you know, I also don't know that I trust this management group to fix that. Like, I don't know that under Benning's leadership, they're ever going to be good enough at identifying character or identifying defensemen or identifying the types of players that you win with to consistently pull out of this. So
Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel don't count?
No, they don't. Okay. Like, that's the wrong type of leadership. You know, if you're not able to tell on your own team that a guy like Tanev's someone you can't lose for cultural reasons, you know, if you're boxed into losing him because you've overvalued guys like Beagle and Roussel in terms of their leadership abilities, you know, I mean, if you have a prospect who, boy, he would mean an awful lot to this team, just to have a lefty third pair guy who could kill penalties in Olio Levy, like, if you don't know that player well enough in his fifth year in the organization to have a sense that he might not show up to camp in shape, and you better have a backup plan, then, like, if you can't evaluate the character of the guys you employ, how are you ever going to win? How are you ever going to bring in the right people to win? You know, and that's sort of what bothers me a little bit about this team so much. Like, when I think about it and try to be objective and try to be fair to everyone, like, one thing that really bothers me is it's not Tucker Pullman was obvious by the analytics, but even by the old school stuff, this team has failed. Like, in terms of evaluating character, this team has failed to construct a group. You know, that's the stuff that drives me nuts. You know, not having a righty centerman right now who can kill penalties, not having a third pair lefty, like, those, that's the meat and potatoes stuff. That's the hockey man stuff. They're poorly built by that criteria, Farhan. This is not some newfangled analytics critique. It's like, what's failing this team is the old school stuff. They don't even have that right.
It's a great way to look at it.
It drives me nuts. Like, honestly, it just drives me nuts. Because, you know, that stuff that I don't trust myself to have as good a feel for as, like, who's going to regress? Who helps you outshoot the opponent? You know what I mean? Who creates the environment where your team is more likely to get the next goal than your opponent? Like, that's the highfalutin analytics stuff that I know. You know? The stuff I'm not as confident about is like the hockey man stuff. I can barely skate fucking backwards. You know, like that's not what I'm going to have a expert knowledge of. But even that stuff, this team's falling short. Drives me nuts. It drives me nuts to cover. Honestly, I'm like, I think this team has broken everyone's brains just a little bit. Like the stress of the pandemic plus watching this team plus 8 years of sustained failure have just like broken everyone a little bit. And I think that's why you're seeing so many people acting out around this team. Like, you know, Anson Carter watches them once and is in like a big Twitter spat with the city. You know, it's just like, it's like you don't even have to be around this team all the time for them to break your brain. And so I feel like we're all on edge just because I feel like it's hard to see where this team and this organization are accurately just because it's so miserable.
No, it is. But, I mean, listen, there's been some amusing extensions to it. Like Sakaris and IMAC, that was hilarious. I mean, it was sad and hilarious, but it's just, I think there is a certain amount of everybody is just so frustrated covering and talking about. And, you know, it's hard not to let the negativity creep in. Like, fortunately for me, I still have a lot of football to cover, right? So I'm not just completely immersed in this, and I can find, you know, a certain level of entertainment on that side of it, right? But looking at this, it's painful, right? I mean, just hearing, like reading the media, because nobody wants to come out and say fire person X, because it's almost borderline unprofessional to be lobbying ownership to fire somebody, because that's not our job. So we instead talk around it, and we instead like throw numbers out there to make it absolutely obvious what we collectively think, because we just can't say the words. And, you know, and that in itself causes a level of tension, because, you know, you want to rail against somebody. You know, for me, like I've been covering this thing since 1994, right? That was my first year in. Great time to start. You know, you wait a while and you get to 2011. And now for me, you know, I'm on the other side of it, and I'm thinking, am I ever going to cover? Forget a cup champion. Am I ever going to cover like a legitimate, meaningful cup run again?
Yeah. I mean, teams fluke into cup runs all the time. You just don't win one by like, you just don't get lucky and win one, but you can get to the cup final. You can win three rounds.
Yeah. You can, I guess Montreal did it last year, but wow.
Yeah, you can catch fire and then get steamrolled in the Stanley Cup final by one of the teams that gets there. That's actually well built. Sure. And if that's what you're aspiring to be, you know, a team that's 18th in point percentage, like the Montreal Canadiens were under a decade of Bergevin's leadership, you know, look, they were 18th in point percentage, but hey, they were 10th in playoff games played or 11th in playoff games played because of that cup run. Like, you can be that team. You can build a team that's, you know, meaty and underskilled and built for the playoffs, and they struggle to make it. But when they do, oh boy, because that's really what the Bergevin Canadiens were, right?
Sure.
I mean, you can build that team if you want. It's fine. It's just, that's not how you win a cup. Right. And it's like there's a hierarchy of things that need to be accomplished to win a cup. Right. And it starts with it starts with really basic stuff. But if we go top down, it's like, you know, cups are at the very, very top of the pyramid. And then further down from that is playoff series wins, like playoff wins. Right. And further down from that is actual wins. And down from that is outscoring your opponent on a consistent basis. And down from that is, you know, players who win puck battles, right? And like you go all the way down and you get to the basics. And what are the basics? It's like defining how you want to play, being disciplined about identifying players at the pro and the amateur ranks who can do that, fitting them in and managing the day-to-day of a 23-man roster in a cap system, allocating money intelligently in terms of your finite resources and cap space, you know, figuring out and being very strategic about when you put your chips in to give yourself a real chance to win. Like, all of that factors in, and that's sort of like the lower rungs. And eventually you get down and can distill, like, what does a good day look like, you know, for everyone in the organization? Like, what are the terms? What terms are we using that we define and we agree on, you know? And if you don't do that, you get to situations where you're just throwing out comps like, oh yeah, you know, Dmitry Zhukinov, he's a lot like Pavel Datsyuk, or Olli Juolevi is a lot like Nick Lidstrom, or Jason Dickinson. You know, we think for us, he's a 30, 35 point third line center who's going to help us on the penalty kill. You know, and it's like, Dickinson's not that guy. He's like a decent utility, defensive, bottom six player. You know, but he's not a signature third line center for your club. You know, Pullman is not even an everyday NHL player. Hamonic, like, I don't even know where he is. I don't even know where he is. Tanner Pearson, you know, I love me some Tanner Pearson. He competes hard as hell. Goes to the net.
Not at that money.
Well, I mean, without question, not at that money. I mean, look at the Leafs. For the amount that Tanner Pearson costs against the cap, the Leafs have Kasha and Kampf, who are like their third line. And like one of the best third lines in hockey. Like other teams identify talent on the cheap every year. For the money that Tanner Pearson makes, the Carolina Hurricanes replace Dougie Hamilton with both D'Angelo to run their power play and Ethan Bear. Like a shutdown righty and a power play ace. And they replace one of the best defensemen in hockey at Tanner Pearson money. Again, you either have the organization set up to do this or you don't, and the Canucks don't. It's infuriating.
Well, no question. And we're going to have plenty of episodes to discuss how infuriating it is. But before we go, real quick, because I didn't start with the obvious, and that is the Habs made a decision with the Canucks there, like in town.
They hadn't gotten there because it was back-to-back. So it happened on Saturday. The Canucks were in Boston.
Does the Habs decision put any more pressure on the Canucks? Because, you know, the analysts, everybody's there. They're like, they did it. Are these guys finally ready to do it? Does it put any more pressure on the Canucks?
Only public pressure, only external pressure. I think internally, I don't think they have pressure on them. Internally, I think they're just doing their thing. They're telling everyone they're doing their thing. They're waiting for the right people. Meanwhile, current personnel just sit in this sort of purgatory awaiting a shoe to drop. I mean, it's deeply unfair. It's deeply unfair to everyone involved in this team directly as an employee, but also to anyone who's ever cared about this team. And I mean, look, you know, I just cover this team. I don't run this team, but I know enough about this business and I follow enough about this business to know what I think's acceptable, like what I'm going to tell fans, like, hey, I think that's a good move. Hey, I think that that's worth supporting. Hey, I think, you know, this line of criticism is unfair. Like, that's what we do, right? And the way that this is playing out, like, I find it loathsome.
How long before this ownership group gets into Eugene Melnyk territory?
I don't know. That's pretty special territory. And you also have to be way more public than that they are. You know, like, Eugene Melnyk also puts his foot in his mouth regularly.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, on radio or on broadcast or what have you. Like, they don't talk much, right? So, you know, I don't think they're at risk of getting into Eugene Melnyk territory. But I think in terms of industry confidence in their ability to chart a productive direction, I think they're, you know, they're not there, but they're, you know, the next rung up. They're not multiple rungs up. They're the next rung up.
Well, the challenge in all of it is that if they make the decision to change the GM, they can't get quality people in to replace him. Like, there's going to be a big relief if that move gets made, right? Finally, that's going to be out there in the public sphere, right? I mean, we know what the market thinks about that, about the current management situation, right? So, but all that said, if that decision happens, because you talked at the start about trying to create a professional organization, and I don't think either one of us believes that's going to happen, where there's a proper president in place and multiple, you know, assistant GMs and silos created like they did in Toronto and so on and so forth. Like, none of us think that's going to happen. So who are you going to get to replace Jim in that moment? And as long as they take the approach of, we're not going to make change until we have the solution, as opposed to talking about the scenario we've said that, okay, well, you know, if you put in a Brad Shaw, put in a Ryan Johnson to kind of get this to the finish line while we're going through a search, right? They don't operate that way. So with that in mind, like, how do you get the right guy to take this on if and when a change, which appears to be inevitable, eventually happens?
Well, I think they're going to have lots of candidates. Like, I think it's still a desirable job. For me, I'm not worried about the, like, can they land a quality person? It's can they set up a quality organization? For me, that's the question. Like, can they set up an organization that's properly and truly functional?
And on that note, before we go, we do want to let you know that former NHLer Sean Thornton is Craig Custance and Sean Gentile's guest Tuesday on the Athletic Hockey Show. Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports hosts the Wednesday Roundtable along with Sarah Sivian, Jesse Granger, and guest Julian McKenzie from The Athletic. Tom Fitzgerald, the general manager of the New Jersey Devils, is Michael Russo's guest this week on Straight from the Source at The Athletic. As for us, we want to thank you for listening to the VanCast. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and a review. Subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all that bonus content from the entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial and then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, get annual subscriptions to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/thevancast. Drencher, we didn't even talk about Brad Marchand getting suspended 3 games. You know that VIPs want to revel in that, but hey, so much to chew on with this team, and looking forward to doing it again later in the week.
I want to note one thing about it really quick.
Okay. All right.
So it's not called in real time.
Right? I know.
The NHL suspends him for 3 games, and there's no comment on it being a missed call. Like, that play was worth 3-game suspension, but no comment on how it was called in game. How does that square?
It's the NHL, because that creates a level of accountability this league is simply not capable of offering.
Mind-blowing, though, right?
Like, it is, but it can't surprise you. It cannot possibly.
It doesn't surprise me, but just because I'm used to it doesn't mean I'm not outraged.
Fair enough. I've gone numb to the NHL. Yeah, I've gone numb to the NHL nonsense when it comes to that. Hey, are we back Wednesday or Friday? You're the boss.
Let's figure it out. Let's smell how this week goes. I think if it's a big loss in Ottawa, we probably should go and be prepared for an emergency episode. And if it's like a comfortable Canucks win, maybe we go on Friday. Maybe we go on a practice day. Because it still won't be a game day. The team has a couple days off after this road trip. So we'll figure it out. But good chat, man.
Perfect. Looking forward to it. Travel safe, my friend.
Mariners suck.